25 years on the PGA Tour and a lifetime member of the PGA Tour and PGA of America. Jay Delsing brings you his perspective on one of the world's greatest games as a professional golfer and network broadcaster. It's the game that connects the pros and the average Joes. Brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Golf with Jay Delsing is now on 101. ESPN.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay Delsing, and with me is my friend, longtime caddy, John Perlis. Perley, good morning.
Good morning, Jay. Just thrilled to be here. Fun stuff to talk about today, and let's get rolling.
Yeah, we formatted a show just like Around the Golf. The first segment is called On the Range, and the On the Range segment is brought to you by Golf Discount, where St. Louis shops for all of its golf needs. Now, this is crucially important, and I'm going to quiz you on this.
Okay. Should I write it down?
Our social media outlets.
I'm not writing it down.
Get ready.
I'm not writing it down.
Twitter?
I'm not ready.
Is Jay Delsing. Facebook, Golf with Jay Delsing and Jay Delsing Golf. LinkedIn is just Jay Delsing, and there's Jay Delsing's everywhere, and our Instagram is?
Who cares?
Who gives a damn? Nope. We don't care. Okay. We got another show. I'm excited about this show. General overview, we got Justin Hoagland with Golf Tech. We got Whack and Chase
segment
in there.
Yes.
It's going to be fantastic. Great interview with Jim Bones Mackay.
Just fantastic. After my own heart. Caddy, kind of caddy extraordinaire.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we've got our Mike Duffy date confirmed for the 23rd. So let's go down to Justin Hoagland, city manager at Golf Tech and fellow PGA professional. And don't forget, the August sale at Golf Tech, up to 20% off lesson plans and programs. It is the time for their lowest prices on lessons throughout the year.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Jay. Hey, we're really excited to be offering this month a significant discount on our lesson programs at Golf Tech. Like I said last week, listeners can save up to 20% off of all of our lesson programs this month. Absolutely the best time to get in on the best pricing of the year and get the best instruction available in the industry. Our PGA instructors will customize a specific improvement game plan over a 3, 6, or 12-month period, which includes weekly lessons, in-bay practice, using our video playback of their swing. And we even post your lessons to a Golf Tech member's performance webpage for their further review and retention. You won't find all of these features together anywhere else as part of the golf learning environment out there. So we're unique in that. And over the past several months, I've talked about how we help improve golfers of all skill levels. And it's truly a passion of ours at Golf Tech. Our coaches are equipped to help their games, and we're motivators, we're coaches, we're instructors. And we really customize a program for anyone who wants to get serious about their game. So just with a few weeks left of the month, we're offering these special discounts. Give us a call at 314-721-4653. That's 314-721-GOLF. We're located in Chesterfield, Clayton, and DePere. 10 coaches ready to assist. So now's the best time to call. Again, our August sale going on, up to 20% off. Give us a call. Appreciate it, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Justin, thank you for adding that to the Golf with Jay Delsing show. We've got a Whack and Chase segment that's going to be very fun. They're playing the second round of the playoff series at Medina Country Club, Medina number 2. Have you ever played Medina number 2 in Chicago?
Didn't we play it in college? We played Medina, I think, in the morning and
we
Butler
did.
In the afternoon, and we were all woe out after those
we had no balls. We had no golf balls.
No. It was so much fun, though, playing those two great golf courses, but I remember they beat us up. I was hardly in the mindset to play a tournament the next day after just getting beat to death on those two golf courses.
Why we ever thought 36 holes on those two monsters was a good idea?
Well, because we wanted the opportunity, you know. And remember, Coach had some spectacular round once upon a time in, was it a U.S. Open or a PGA?
Yep.
He shot 62 or 64, the little pro.
So he says,
I had to play that. So he says, I saw the scorecard. It was up on the wall in a corner behind it. Someplace or something like that. Anyway, it was spectacular. Now, the score he shot once upon a time there was absolutely one of the all-time great rounds.
Yep, that's right. We've added this Whack and Chase component to our show. And everywhere I go, people are saying to me, you know, what is the deal with this? And I know we're not going to do this until the 19th hole, but, you know, it's formulated after the popular series Car Talk, and the brothers, you know, click and clack. It's really been fun.
It's fun stuff. And then we get to hear other people's stories. We hear constantly, what do people like about the show? They like to hear stories. So we get to hear other people's stories. We interject our stories. We pull, you know, one of the favorite things a couple weeks ago, we asked one of the call-ins, what's the best shot you ever hit? It was 10 minutes before he remembered he had a hole in one once upon a time.
I know.
It's just funny on
like,
how people's minds are working, and it's just been a fun.
I got a great question for you about Medina, story about Medina.
Okay.
Tell the listeners about when you were working for NBC, our buddy Tom Randolph and Tommy Roy and the whole you know, Roger Mulpe.
For the Ryder Cup.
And tell them about the Steve Stricker coming down the stretch at 17. And
you mean just that, how he kind of, you know, great player Steve Stricker is.
And a big friend, a great guy. We played with him before. Yep.
I don't know him hardly at all except a little bit, tiny bit through you. But I've always been a fan. I'm still a fan. He's still a great player. But, boy, that's one of those situations, and that's what the Ryder Cup does to people. It's that next level of pressure that these guys simply are not used to. Steve Stricker is such a great player to begin with, but around the greens is spectacular. He had a medium to very easy chip on the 17th hole. It's one of those things.
A little over the green, right? Just downhill slightly, but nothing dramatic.
But just kind of bump it on the green or maybe on the fringe and let it
roll
out.
You can hit it almost too hard and too high, and it's going to be fine.
It was pretty much just not a funnel, but I mean.
How was the lie?
I was 6 feet from it.
I know
It was good to very good. For his skill level, it was a little downhill for sure, but he clearly knows how to handle that. And I'm thinking, he's got this.
Or he might make it.
He could. But, boy, did he just kind of gun it a little bit. Now, again, you don't want to leave it there.
It's a Ryder Cup.
But he's not normally thinking that. But that's why I love, we talk about this all the time, that's why I love the Ryder Cup. That's why I love the FedEx playoffs at the end of the year.
That's right.
It puts these guys in a situation that even the best aren't used to, that tweaks them. And out of that comfort zone, sometimes they excel. And in this case, unfortunately, and I think he said, that hurt him for a long time. He knows that was a tough pill to swallow, that miss.
Well, we're going to talk about this in a
little
bit.
By the way, just quickly, he pured it off the tee to get to there.
No question.
He like extra pured it, and that's
why
it hurt him
so far. Right.
And
we're going to talk a little bit about this after our interview with Bones McKay, because he talks a little bit about the Ryder Cup, and that Ryder Cup specifically when Phil got paired with Keegan Bradley. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's going to wrap up the On the Range segment. Folks, the On the Range segment is going to be a little shorter this week because of these interviews, so hang in there with us. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN. Come back for the front nine.
Doster, Olam & Boyle, LLC are a proud sponsor of Golf with Jay Delsing here on 101 ESPN. The firm was started in January 2015 by Mike Doster, Jess Olam, and John Boyle, three veterans of the St. Louis real estate, banking, commercial, and corporate legal landscape. The firm was founded on the shared view that success should be measured by client and community satisfaction, not profits for partner. The firm's focus is on business, real estate, corporate, finance and restructuring, and succession planning. Since its founding in 2015, Doster, Olam, and Boyle have been involved in real estate, business, and corporate transactions with a combined value in excess of over $1 billion. For decades, Doster, Olam, and Boyle lawyers have been recognized as leaders in their practice areas by their peers. Doster, Olam, and Boyle, LLC. Extraordinary talent, ordinary people. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
I want to welcome my newest sponsor to Golf with Jay Delsing. It's Golf Discount. Golf Discount is where St. Louis has shopped for its golf equipment since 1976. Golf Discount has been and still is locally owned. They employ the most experienced staff you'll find anywhere. There are two locations, one in South County just off of Lime Ferry, and one in O'Fallon at Highways K and N. Golf Discount fits your custom equipment to your swing using the state-of-the-art GC Quad Launch Monitor. This ensures that perfect fit that you're looking for. Go to Golf Discount for all your golfing needs. I want to thank Whitmore Country Club for sponsoring my show, Golf with Jay Delsing. There's 90 holes of golf at Whitmore. If you join out at Whitmore, you get privileges at the Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, Golf Club of Wentzville, and all the cart fees are included in that membership. There's no food and beverage minimums and no assessments ever. They've got a great 24-hour fitness center, a large pool complex, three tennis courts, a year-round social calendar that is rocking out at Whitmore. There's kids' clubs, junior golf, junior tennis, swim team available for your children. This is a family-friendly atmosphere, a wonderful staff, and you've got to go to the golf shop and visit my friend, Bummer. He is an absolute treat. Don't forget about the golf leagues, their skin games, members' tournaments. Bummer and the staff out of Whitmore are continually running cool and fun golf events for you and your family. Visit their website at whitmoregolf.com. Welcome back. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. Jay and John are here to bring you the segment we call the Front Nine. We've got a killer interview, at least in my opinion. I hope you enjoy it.
This totally agree.
Jim Bones McKay. Gosh, Jim, longtime friend. Always had a really great rapport with you, and man, what a career you had. Well, first of all, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, Bones, just, you know, Googling you a little bit. You know, we started out, I guess we've probably known each other for, close to 25 or 30 years.
I would say closing in 30.
I can remember when you started caddying. I think you started caddying for Miser, Larry Mize, and, you know, Scott Simpson a little bit. I can remember you hanging around just talking to you. You were one of the taller guys. I was tall. We just kind of hung out and talked together before you even met Phil. I can remember those days.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, 1990, and, you know, the time flies by, as you know, and, it was, as you say, I can remember being paired with you at the Kemper Open there at the at Avenel and other situations like that. So it's funny what sticks in your mind, but it's great to have friends, you know, that and relationships that last as long.
Well, it really is, and I got to tell you what a career you've had. When I look at you and Phil, you caddied for Phil for 25 years, five major championships. I think, Bones, is this right? 12 Ryder Cup appearances and 12 President's Cup appearances?
Actually, it was 11 of each.
11 of
he's
each.
He's gone on now to make one more, so he's on a run of 24, I guess that would be. An incredible run. And you know, when I went to work for him in 1992, my only goal as a caddy, because as you know, Jay, you don't know how long your caddy career is going to last and what's going to happen. There's no job security in it, so you know, you just take what you can and you appreciate every minute of it. When I went to work for that, I wanted to work in one Ryder Cup. That was my goal in caddying for Phil, and I ended up working 11 straight for him. So that was a tremendous, you know, pleasure for me. And you know, I can't say enough about that tournament itself, the Ryder Cup, and, you know, all that goes along with it and all the other tournaments I was lucky enough to go to.
Bones, and you know, the way that Phil plays, I just think of all the different shots. Is there any Ryder Cup experiences that stand out in your mind with, so 11 of them you played half across the pond and the other half over here. And it's just remarkable how much the Ryder Cup has grown in popularity because even when we both started on tour, I was, you know, 5 years ahead of you, but the Ryder Cup was just kind of it was until they included, you know, all of Europe on their side. It really didn't become what it is today.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, when they all of a sudden had Seve Ballesteros playing for the European team and Thornhard Langer, things changed quickly. And I think certainly America, you know, the U.S. was winning virtually everyone there for quite some time. And then in the 80s, things changed dramatically. And golf is the big beneficiary of that, if you ask me. You know, when you have these incredibly competitive Ryder Cups and there's so much passion and so much that goes into it, you know, it just kind of fuels the fire of it being such a great event. And, you know, I tell people all the time that, you know, to me, part of what makes golf so great as a sport is the fact that you get an event like this where guys – They're not only not making any, you know, a dollar from playing in this, you know, they're changing their schedule. They're flying in their parents and their friends, and, you know, at great cost. And anybody with would in that situation, but it just speaks, I think, for how great golf is that they're arguably the one of, if not the most premier events of the sport, is one where there's absolutely no prize money. You're just doing it for the love of your country and your continent and for your, representing your tour. And as you know, Jay, I mean, guys will move heaven and earth to make those teams because they just mean so much. And, you know, it's I've done every single one since 1993, and I just can't get enough of it. I think it's an amazing event.
Yeah, it's really special. I would concur as a player. I never made it to a team, but of all the things I'd like to do or would have liked to have done, that would be at the top of the list. Bones, is there anything that sticks out in your mind, any part of the Ryder Cup lore that's most special to you?
It would take me hours to answer that question because there's so much, Jay. I mean, you know, the great thing about the Ryder Cups is you can go there and have an amazing week on a week where you don't win. And certainly, you know, I was on, you know, caddying on, you know, for Phil on teams where there were several losses. But, you know, I was on the first tee in I think, 2006, the first match on Friday with Phil and Chris DeMarco when Darren Clark came to the tee in the first event, I think, basically, that he played in, certainly the first Ryder Cup, after losing his wife. And, you know, it was one of the most emotional things I've ever seen in my life where, you know, you're playing this incredible event and he comes to, you know, the first tee to just, you know, a thunderous reception. Everybody, you know, is well aware of what he and his family had been going through for months and years, and you know, walked on the tee and hugged both of the American players and then hit it straight down the middle, hit it to 10 feet and birdied the first hole. And it was like one of the loudest roars I've ever heard. And, you know, you can't obviously put a price tag on something like that. You know, we went on and got our butts kicked that week and, you know, that's fine. I mean, everybody gave it their absolute all, but just to be a part of that scene, if you will, or excuse me, you know, witnessing that going on, it was an honor to be there. And, you know, there were, you know, dozens more great, you know, stories, you know, throughout the Ryder Cups that I was lucky enough to be at.
Yeah, Bones, what a stupid question. That's kind of like asking you which one of your kids you like the best. You've got all the, you know, you've got all those beautiful memories in there, and it we'll just wait for the book to come out. But I can remember talking to Corey Pavin when he played his first Ryder Cup match, and he was playing with Lanny, and he was hitting the first and the alternate shot, the four ball, and they announced him on the first tee, and he literally told me he didn't think he could get the ball to stay on the tee. His hands were shaking so much, you know. And so when you think about what these great players have been through, and that does that to them, that it shows you what it means to them.
No question. One of my favorite Ryder Cup stories happened in 2012 in Chicago at Medina, which was Keegan Bradley's first Ryder Cup, and he and Phil were going to play together. And basically, you know, it was alternate shot. So I'm out in the fairway, you know, forecatting, if you will, waiting for Keegan to drive it off the first tee and kind of do my caddy thing. And he drove it, and I couldn't pick the ball up in the sky. And I realized, you know, after a couple of seconds, I had no idea where this ball was, and I heard something out of, you know, in my hearing, if you will, and saw something on my peripheral vision and realized that Keegan had driven it so far, the ball was basically closer to the green than it was to me. And I described, you know, somewhere, you know, around 350-60 yards, you know, just incredibly jacked up. And so we played a couple of holes and whatnot. We're out there in this match. I can't remember who they're playing. And Keegan comes over to me on the third or fourth hole and says to me, "What happened on number one?" I go, "What do you mean, what happened on number one? You hit one of the longest drives I've ever seen." Anyway, long story short, he had completely blacked out. The pressure was so intense. There was so much going on. He could not remember what had happened on a hole he played an hour before. So, again, you get, you know, it just speaks for what these guys go through physically and emotionally. And again, what an amazing event it is.
Yeah, man, that is incredible, and it is really remarkable when you think about the situations you've been in and what it does to you and how you respond. And sometimes, you know, it's surprising. I'm in the few tournaments that I've won, you know, I can remember a certain calm coming over me and in a situation where I'm thinking, man, there's no way I should be calm. you know, and you can do these things, and it's remarkable. Bones, what do you think the best or the most important thing a caddy can do for a player? I mean, one of the things I want to talk to a little bit about is that, to me, you and Phil had something that nobody else had at the time. Now, on the tour today, it looks like the players talk about team concept. My team, my player, you know, Greller and Jordan, Michael Greller and Jordan Spieth kind of created that neat unit out there. But you and Phil had that, man, to me. Talk a little bit about that. And I think it's really a great thing that the caddies are starting to get more recognition and obviously making more money.
Yeah, thanks. You know, well, yeah, it's the whole caddy thing's it's a fascinating dynamic, as you know, and as you just said. And, you know, in terms of what a caddy can bring, the most important thing a caddy can bring, other than the obvious, which is to be incredibly prepared, having walked the course, you know your player. I think, you know, one of the things I tell people when they ask me that question is the caddy's got to not be afraid to disagree with the player. And in doing so, it's one thing to disagree, you know, when you're in 43rd place playing in Palm Springs and nobody cares. But it's equally, you know, if not more important, to not be afraid to disagree with your player when you're playing at the back nine at Augusta on Sunday. And, you know, it's the easiest thing. It's an easy trap to sometimes fall in as a caddy, just to, you know, love everything your player loves. I love 7-iron. Well, I do too. And I think, you know, the best caddies out there are certainly guys that, you know enough about what's going on, know enough about their player, know enough about the fact that he's got all his adrenaline pumping through his body that, no, you know, I don't like 7. I think you can get 8 there and in a sense, be able to back it up. I mean, I think one of the qualities a lot of good caddies have is the ability to make their point in very few words. You know, there's no question, and we saw it a lot this past week with Shane Lowry, you're going to get into these extended conversations about targets and about wind and stuff like that. But on those occasions where you don't necessarily agree with your player, you've, in a sense, got to back it up. And, you know, if you can turn to him and say, you know, I like 8-iron here because you hit one 167 yards on Thursday in a similar temperature with a similar wind, it gives the player that much more confidence in what it is you're saying to him. So, you know, I think that those are, you know, some of the, you know, it's, again, a long conversation that all caddies can bring to the table, certainly confidence. I mean, you look at a guy like Joe LaCava caddying for Tiger Woods this year, and there was this great story about them on 16. You know, they're looking to ultimately get in the lead after Molinari made double on 15 at Augusta this year, and Tiger hits it to a foot and a half. They're on 16, and Tiger brings him in for the read.
Oh, my gosh. You know, we'd grab a caddy. I mean, just from a pay standpoint, Bones, it was almost insulting. You know, when I grew up as a caddy, so it was a hell of a lot more than I was making. But, I mean, we were just bag toters, you know, and we'd just show up and get paid a little money. But just the whole Tiger Woods effect. And, you know, Phil had something to do with that, and you're part of that discussion as well. But I just never gave it much thought, Bones, about what the game and the tour would look like, you know, 15 years down the road or 10 years down the road. And to look at what these guys are enjoying, the stages, just the, from a hospitality standpoint, but just what the golf courses look like and the spectators and the amount of people, just remarkable.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, we were laughing over a beer recently about, you know, what golf would look like in this day and age if Tiger Woods would have played soccer, you know, and you know, he changed everybody's life out there, you know, for the better. And you can't thank the guy enough for it. But to your point, everything got so much bigger and better, certainly the purses, but so much more than that after he came out in 96 and, you know, you factor in things like TV contracts and the whatnot. But, you know, the reality is, you know, whether you're the second best player of that generation or the 200th best player of that generation, I mean, you know, we all, you know, got to stay in nicer hotels and enjoy a better lifestyle because of what Tiger brought to the table and what he did for the game. And again, you know, with the popularity of it, and I was fortunate enough to see it on many of occasions, you know, whether it's the Masters or, you know, I remember one year Phil and Tiger played together on a Saturday or Sunday at the Buick Open in Flint, Michigan. and that neither one of them was going to win the tournament. They were probably in 20th or 30th, but there was a blimp shot of somebody took a camera up there and took a blimp shot of the golf course, and it basically seemed like virtually everybody at the tournament that day, they showed a shot of the property, was following this group of Tiger and Phil, and certainly it's you know, Tiger was the guy that stirred the drink, that kind of drove the bus, if you will, and what he did for everybody out there is just something you can't, you know, calculate or put into numbers, but we're all incredibly grateful for it. And, you know, to me, when you go to, you know, even like the Ryder Cup last year, as big as that event has gotten, we've discussed that, and you see the incredible first tee with the stands, I think that could hold several thousand people behind the first tee. I think that also is, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you know, it's hard to put a finger on, you know, all the areas that it ultimately affected, be it, you know, folks in the media or the officials or what have you. But, you know, again, you just can't thank the guy enough. And I think that's why, you know, other than the obvious, why his win at Augusta this year was just so popular. People were just so happy for him. And he's had all these issues physically. And just to see him kind of conquer those and have the surgeries work out and win in the fashion he did. And I'm sure, you know, that's why he reacted the way he did there on 18 green. It was, I think, something that put a big smile on a lot of people's faces.
Well, that's going to wrap up the front nine. We're going to take a pause for a moment. You can hear from some of the cool folks that sponsor us at Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN. But don't go anywhere, because we're going to wrap up this interview with Bones McKay on the back nine.
Quick note, we just got a call from our friend Joe Schieser at USA Mortgage. He said the rates are still below 4%, and if you mention Golf with Jay Delsing, he'll give you a discount on your closing costs. Please call him today at 314-628-2015.
The iconic Tony Penna golf brand returns for a new generation of golfers. Featuring the revival of the classic iOmatic series, Tony Penna golf equipment features classic old-school designs combined with all of the latest in modern technology. Tony Penna Persimmon Wood drivers were used to win more major championships than any other brand from the 1960s through the 1980s. Some of the great players that played Tony Penna Woods were Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, Seve Ballesteros, Tom Watson, and Nick Faldo. Tony Penna Golf Equipment returns, offering the finest in tour quality golf equipment at factory direct pricing. Visit TonyPennaGolf.com today and play the brand used by some of golf's greatest players. Tony Penna Golf, the legendary brand, back and better than ever. Check it out at TonyPennaGolf.com.
Are you looking for a golf training facility and PGA pros to help you out year-round? Make sure you get to Golf Tech. They've been in St. Louis since 2007 and have three convenient locations to serve you. They've got state-of-the-art video equipment, and you can take your lesson home with you and replay it as much as you'd like. Start with a golf swing evaluation for only $125 and let a Golf Tech coach customize a game plan for you. 314-721-GOLF. You can find them online as well, golftech.com-St. Louis. Play better. Swing better. Golf Tech.
Do you folks know about a third generation jeweler that's been operating in the St. Louis area since 1946? Well, if you haven't heard the name Sutley before, you have now. They are the premier Hearts on Fire dealer in the metropolitan region and have been for more than 20 years. What's the Hearts on Fire diamond? It is the world's most perfectly cut stone. The Sutleys are knowledgeable and passionate about jewelry. They're open 6 days a week. They want to develop a relationship so that they can meet all of your jewelry needs. They have famous designers like Lagos, Zengani, and Simon G, just to name a few. Whether it's a Hearts on Fire diamond or any piece of jewelry, please visit the Sutley family. They are located at Lamp and Lantern Village on Clayton Road, just west of 141 in Town and Country. Or you can go see them at SAETTELE.com.
After 25 years on the PGA Tour, Jay Delsing takes you behind the scenes from the eyes of a pro. Now back to more golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
The Back Nine is brought to you by Tony Penna Golf Company. The iconic Tony Penna Golf brand is back for a new generation of golfers with a revival of the classic iOmatic series. Visit TonyPennaGolf.com today.
Welcome back to Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay. I got my favorite caddy and buddy, John, here with me, and we are heading to the back nine. And before we do that, Pearlie, we got to thank Whitmore Country Club. They are the title sponsor here at the Golf with Jay Delsing show. You join at Whitmore, you get 90 holes of golf. You also get access to the Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, the Golf Club of Wentzville, and cart fees are included in that membership. There are three tennis courts out there, a large pool complex, 24-hour fitness center, no food and beverage minimums, no assessments. This is what we've talked about, a place that helps grow the game. You drop your kids off. There's a kids club where your kids can, they can go play golf, they can hang out with other kids, they can go to swim, they can do video games. You can go out and have a drink with your wife, have dinner, go play golf. There's the year-round social calendar out there is great. Holiday parties are really, really fun. There's picnics, date nights, live music all the time. Junior golf, junior tennis, swim teams are available. It's just a family-friendly atmosphere. It's something that you want with a family. It's a place you want to hang out with, hang out at. And you've got to go see Bummer. Bummer Berry's in the golf shop. He's a terrific guy, assistant pro. He'll help you with your game, answer any questions you have. He's a friend of the show. He's been on the show. We will have him on again. He'll run golf leagues for you. There are skin games, members, tournaments, couples events, you name it. This is a place you want to join. You're looking for a place to hang out, enjoy yourself, go play a little golf, get your game in shape. Whitmore Country Club, 636-926-9622. All right, we are going back, and we are going to wrap up the interview that I had with Jim Bones Mackay. You know, Bones, one of the things that's interesting about Tiger, and you're a guy that's had both knees replaced in 2016, and I want to talk about your transition to the TV because you're doing a great job. And this perspective you're giving me and my listeners today, you're being able to kind of portray that on TV, and that's not an easy thing. But, you know, when you overcome injury and you've got this pain and stuff like that, and you saw Tiger swing up until he got his back fused, and I'm like, there's no way in hell he can compete with today's player. And then he gets this back surgery, and all of a sudden, the door's open again.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, it just goes to show what a lot of heart and, you know, being as mentally tough as he is, and certainly, you know, physically forever there, he was, you know, by far the best player in the game in terms of his ball striking, short game, putting, and all that stuff. But you know, to your point, you know, here he is this past April, and, you know, I'm sure it's tough for him to get to a level where he hit it like he used to, but it's more than good enough. I mean, he obviously wins the Tour Championship last year in Atlanta on one of the best ball-striking golf courses the PGA Tour goes to, a course where you absolutely can't fake it, and just dominates the event, in a sense, on Sunday and wins. And then there he is at Augusta doing his thing. So, you know, the guy, you know, he's the most competitive person I've ever met, and has this, you know, just incredible sense of the moment, if you will, and that big stage that he just loves to be on. And, you know, I had a chance, I think we were paired with him at Augusta the year he won his fourth straight major there in 2000 or 2001, and won his title soon. And, you know, watching him certainly in that phase of his career, but then again, then later on now, the way he does it, the way he manages his game, and he doesn't make mistakes and ultimately gets to the finish line the way he did at Augusta, it's incredible to see. And, you know, people can't get enough of it, and I certainly hope he's got many more years of that ahead of him.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, Bones, to your point there, he is definitely doing it in a different fashion, but I've never met or seen a competitor that doesn't give up on any play. So, you know, if Tiger's got a 200-foot putt for double bogey, he's got every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears in this thing, and it's just it's not an easy thing to do.
Exactly. I mean, you look at some of the victories that he's had over the course of his career. And I remember one year, I think he won at Torrey Pines. He made the cut on the number and then shot something in the low 60s on Saturday, went on to win the tournament. And then the year he won Pebble, I think, coming back to meet Matt Gogel when he holed the wedge shot on 15. I mean, he was that guy that showed up, you know, on Sunday, seven or eight back, and was absolutely sure he could still win the tournament, which I think is a quality not many people have, if any. And, you know, there was nothing he couldn't do. And, of course, when you see that name creeping up the leaderboard, it can have a funny effect on some of the guys ahead of him. And, you know, that's how you up with 80-something victories.
I've been fortunate enough to do a little bit of this with a little bit of commentary work with Fox and PGA Tour Live, and you went straight to NBC. You got your, I think you got your knees done first, right? Didn't you get your knees done in 2016? That's a big deal, having both at the same time, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I got them done late 16, and then went to work for NBC in July of the next year in 17.
So talk a little bit about that transition. I mean, it's one thing. I'll say this for me. I love the fact that I can still be connected to the game when I do the TV, but it's still not quite the same. You know, it's just not the same as having those clubs in your hand or being in the game, so to speak.
Well, you're right. You know, when I went to work there, Nota Begay, who I work with, told me that the toughest part, to your point, Jay, is, you know, it's going to take a while to get over the fact that you're not part of the competition anymore. And certainly he's right, and you're right. So I'm 2 years in now, and it's just now getting easier. But, you know, as you say, you can't make a difference out there in terms of, you know, from a caddy perspective, you know, affecting somebody positively, you know, talking a guy into a good club or just doing, you know, one of the 100 little things that caddies do to make their players' lives easier. So, that's a big transition, as you say. And I can totally understand with what you're saying and what Nota ultimately told me that it takes a while to get past that.
Bones, you have a knack for being able to talk about the stuff that you see, and I think that's a gift. And what I mean by that is you'll pick up a nuance that a player and a caddy are going through because of your experience, and then be able to relay that on the TV. Are you aware? Is that something that just comes natural for you? Were you told, hey, you know, let me just ask, how the hell do you do that so well?
Well, thanks. I think that certainly after 28 or 9 years of listening to other people's conversations, be it other players and caddies, you have a knack for what certain things mean. And the great thing for me, and I'm sure for you when you do it for Fox, is these microphones now that pick up the player caddy conversations, I'm able to ultimately hear those through my headphones, if you will, and I can kind of pick apart what they're talking about or maybe the, you know, the discussion they're having relative to wind or a club selection, and hopefully relay that to the people watching at home. So that's fun for me. And, you know, I was covering Rory last week at the British Open in his quest on Friday there at Portrush to make the cut. And it was just fascinating, you know, listening to him. I think he got caught a little bit between clubs there on 18 to a tough left hole location. And it's fun, you know, being able to talk about, you know, that high level situation that those guys are in right there, where there's a huge difference between, you know, hitting that smooth 7 or that hard hooky 8, and hopefully being able to relay that to the viewer.
Yeah, no, you do a great job of it. I just got to ask one more thing. I'll tell you a quick story. My first event, the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, I'm out on the back nine with Sergio, Adam Scott, and Dustin Johnson. And I mean, it is a rock star group, great, hard golf course to walk, almost impossible. Anyway, so we're out there and off we go. And I think they went to me 7 or 8 times the first day, and 5 of those times my equipment didn't work. And I got back to the hotel, Bones, and I had text from my brothers like, dude, you're not saying anything. You're not talking. And I'm like, oh, man, that is so frustrating.
Yeah, technical difficulties. Yeah, I hear you. I know what you're saying. When you're out there as a walker, you're a little bit out there on an island, and you know, certainly if something goes wrong, it takes a little while for somebody to get out to you in a case like you're talking about there at Chambers. But, it's funny like that. I had an incident earlier in my little career with NBC where Zinger asked me a question and I answered it, but it didn't come out on the air. But I tell you what, the folks that we work with doing what we do, it's incredible the amount of hours that go into certainly putting on shows like that and the hundreds of people they have in those television compounds. I'm always blown away, you know, by the amount of work and the intensity that it takes, and that they do it as well as they do in terms of the folks behind the scenes.
Yeah, Bones, the comment, it takes a village. I mean, when I drove into the compound, I'm like, this is a whole city, and it's all based on, you know, everyone working together, trying to put together a show that everybody can enjoy and make it look seamless and easy and whatever. It's impressive.
Absolutely. My first tournament, you know, yours was obviously the U.S. Open. Mine was the British Open in 17. And to your point, when I got out of the van at the television compound, my first day there, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And as you say, it's like a small little town, and it just incredibly hardworking people that have been doing it for years and years and incredibly good at what they do.
Yeah, great stuff. Hey, Bones, one last thing. Give us, I know you have two children. You have Emma and you have Oliver, your wife, Jen. Give us a little, just a little update on how your family's doing. I know you live in Scottsdale now, and I know you're a good dad, and I know you're involved with the kids' lives, and juggling all that is not easy, but just give us a little update on how everything's going.
Well, I appreciate you asking. Yeah, I'm very lucky. I've got a tremendous wife and two great kids, Oliver and Emma, who are 15 and 13, and because it gets so kind of ugly hot in Scottsdale this time of year, sometimes I take them on the road with me, and we just came back from a three-week trip to the Irish Scottish and the Open Championship. And you know, you have great memories with your family on the road when you travel, and at the Irish Open this year, this course called Lahinch in Ireland, it's the surfing capital of the UK. So I was out there, you know, working at Lahinch doing my thing, and my kids were out there in wetsuits surfing and off the coast of Ireland, which is, you know, something I never thought that my kids would ever get a chance to do, or certainly you know, even existed. So little memories like that go a long way, and I'm really grateful for them. And it, you know, frequent flyer miles can certainly come in handy in terms of, you know, moving your family around a little bit this time of year and spending some time with them. So I'm very grateful for them, and I'm grateful for you know, for them to be able to spend some time with me sometimes when I'm away from home.
Yeah, hey, that's really cool. And hey, I have frequent flyer miles, and if your kids aren't available, I'm always willing to go over to Ireland or something like that, see those places. I really appreciate you jumping on. I know you're in Reno this week, so enjoy the Montrose and that golf course. That's a hell of a golf course to walk. And we'll be tuning in, but thanks for joining me.
Jay, thanks so much for having me on. Take care of yourself.
Man, I got to tell you, I sat down, did this interview, and Pearlie, it was like nostalgic all over again. It was so fun. I can remember when Phil came down, amateur at ASU, comes down, we're playing down at Star Pass, which was very sketchy TPC down in Tucson.
So as an amateur, he's playing in that PGA event.
He is a junior in college and just kicks ASU, everybody's ass.
Yeah.
He wins the tournament.
And what a funky golf course that was.
Funky.
You're hitting
it
over mountains, over rocks, blind spots, all
crazy.
Over the place.
But the fact of the matter is, 156 of the best players in the world were out there playing, and this kid, who is a junior, I'd never heard of him. I think you had neither at the time, and he just whipped everybody's ass. Mm-hmm. But what is bigger to me, and we talked about this last week with Tony La Russa when Tony was on, the passion that Tony had for baseball, the passion that Tony had for life, just ran over me, okay? Same thing here. Bones, he says to me, after we do this interview, he probably wouldn't want me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. He goes, Jay, I've had jet lag. I flew in from the British Open. You know, I was over at Royal Portrush. He goes, I wanted to sound passionate, and I hope I didn't sound arrogant. And I said, Bones.
In the interview he's talking? Yeah.
I said, Bones, oh, my gosh, you're so gracious, first of all, saying that. And I didn't tell him I was going to mention it, but I knew I'd mention it because it's just going to endear him more to everybody. I said, it's all good, man. It's all good, and your stories are fantastic. And let's just jump right in to the Keegan Bradley story, the Ryder Cup at Medina. Before that, though, John, he says in the interview, all I wanted to do, I met him. He was caddying for Larry Mize, Scott Simpson, and some of those guys. And then he met
Phil.
Great
players.
Yeah,
great players,
for sure. Yeah. The major champions, each one of them.
Yep.
And Bone says, all I wanted to do was caddy in a Ryder Cup. That's all I wanted. And he only caddied in 11 of them, 11 straight.
That's awesome. Absolutely awesome.
But let's talk about what he says about Keegan Bradley. There's no way, unless we start relating to that story, that people can come to grips with what these players are going through.
During the Ryder Cup.
Hell yeah. No money. You know, they're doing this for serious red, white, and blue pride. Mm-hmm. And let's not kid ourselves. They're compensated extremely well. So that's not the issue. But this is their time. And Keegan Bradley blacks out.
Yeah, when he said he flexed out on the first hole, I was there. I get to work those for NBC, and the crowd was going absolutely nuts. And I love the way he described, you know, Keegan's drive off the first hole. It was a monster. By the way, he didn't mention the second hole, and I think it was the second hole. Keegan hit it 350, 360, some number up there that they're like, okay, what do we even do from here?
I think he was so geeked out on the adrenaline that he had no idea what he was capable of.
Yeah,
and I think Phil had to be a very stabilizing influence there to say, dude, we're good, man.
But he's jacked up, too. It's why I liked doing my little tiny part with NBC. I think it's why the players like it so much. And, again, it's a place where they're out of that comfort zone. I remember years ago, and I can't remember now if it was Oak Hill or Brookline, but Curtis Strange, who was a pick of Lanny Watkins in the Ryder Cup, walking down to the first tee. Now, here's Curtis, multi-U.S. Open winner and everything else. He's walking down there.
Back-to-back, 88, 89, yeah.
So must have been Oak Hill then, because that's where...
It was Oak Hill because he had a disastrous finish with us in his match against Nick Faldo.
Well, he did, but my point is, at the beginning of the tournament, here's a superstar, multiple major winner, and I'm telling you, I thought he wasn't going to make it to the first tee. He was so nervous. He wouldn't bend his knees coming down this hill, and I'm like, what's going on? That's how nervous this guy was.
Right.
And I watched some of these guys, Jay. They stayed nervous for 18 holes. There was never a calm moment.
It's interesting. You know, Pavin talked to me, and when we were still friends, a whole nother show, when he said that he was over playing in the Belfry, rookie on the Ryder Cup, playing with Lanny, an alternate shot. So Pavin's hitting it off the first tee. So they announced him for the United States. He said he's so nervous. And I think I mentioned this in a previous show, but he's so nervous, he didn't think he could get his ball to stay up on that tee.
Yeah.
And he's only done that how many times?
That almost sounds like one of my dreams where I lose your bag or there's a wall behind my swing or something like that. But these guys are kind of living it. But he did eventually tee it up and play some pretty good golf.
And yeah, he did just fine. He did just fine. Managing those nerves and things like that in the heat of the battle are just fantastic.
So one of the things he mentioned, too, on that – as far as being a great caddy, was most important not to be afraid to disagree.
All right, that's what I was just going to get to. One of my favorite parts of that interview. What is the most important thing that a caddy can do? And give me an example. You and I had we have a terrific rapport, period.
Mm-hmm.
But we had an agreement on the golf course.
Yeah.
So if I was feeling it, you were like, no problem. But there were several times, and you've told this story online before, we're not going to Reno, so you're going to have to dig something else up out of your bucket of crapola over there. But it's crucially important. And I mean, there has to be that respect between the player and the caddy where you go, all right.
Yeah, and again, you and I had an agreement, so we stuck with the agreement. And I didn't care how much I may have hated any given shot. If your body language, your tone of your voice was saying, I got this. This is what I want to do. I said yes. If there was an inkling, though, I can remember a chip out at Brown Deer in Wisconsin. You were playing really well. What's that short par four down the hill? And the second shot's over the creek, over the
16.
Lake.
Yep.
And you would pulled the tee shot, unfortunately, over there.
Yeah, I had a little cabin over there I wanted to visit because every year I went there, I hit it over
there. I was
there.
Just hoping you wouldn't
God,
say
that.
God,
used to
over
piss
there.
Me off. No
so,
kidding.
So you're over there, and, you know, Pearly, I'm going to chip this over here. And I was just like, Jay, you know, we just know. Let's take a different club. Let's chip that thing down.
Put it over there.
And to get it out of there, because we'd kind of gone through that before. And so there was those times to step up. And I think what helped us was we had it agreed upon how we were going to handle the situations.
No question. I got to ask you one more thing before we get out of this segment. Phil's brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he helping anything?
You know,
I got a can of gas to throw on the fire. Is that helpful?
Yeah, but here's the plan. Here's the problem from my perspective. Phil had one of the all-time great caddies.
He did.
And anybody almost that's going to grab on the bag after that isn't going to be as good.
Right.
I don't almost care hardly who it is because of the rapport they had.
Yep.
So, you know, I asked you, what's behind the scenes? And you said, you know what? I think it was just time done. Bones had, both knees replaced?
Yes.
So he was kind of done carrying the bag probably. Phil's ladder in his career, but I can't tell you how many times I see those guys in the golf course now, and that next level of partnership, if you will, team play, boy, it just doesn't seem to get there. He loves his brother. His brother's
no
a good
question.
Caddy.
That's
it's all
not
those
what
things.
We're talking
that's,
about. That's he not, loves his brother, of course. But it's right, Pearl. I mentioned this to him. They had what they're talking about now 25 years before anybody else
when,
had
when
that.
You hear people like Spieth say, it, the team thing,
it's
the team thing,
yep.
Our team.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. Those guys lived it. And to Phil's credit, he gave Bones a lot of credit for that way before it was popular.
Yep, he really did. Well, that's going to do it for the back nine. Man, that was fun. I really enjoyed that. We got to do that more often.
Yeah, what a great one with Bones. Hopefully you get him back another time. He need, by the way, he's doing a great job commentating in my opinion, too.
That's going to do it for the back nine, as I just said. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have an episode of Whack and Chase.
Yeah, baby.
On the 19th hole, this is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Urban Chestnut Brewing Company is proud to be an official sponsor of 101 ESPN's newest show, Golf with our friend Jay Delsing. Just like Jay, Urban Chestnut is born right here in St. Louis. With three local brewing and restaurant locations, you won't travel far to sample straight from the source. If you're heading out to the links this weekend, or if you're just in the mood for a classic German-style beer, grab a four-pack of our fresh, refreshing Zwickel Bavarian Lager wherever craft beers are sold. Urban Chestnut Brewing Company, St. Louis, Missouri. Prost!
Golf Discount is where St. Louis has shopped for all of its golf equipment needs since 1976. There are two locations in town, one in South County just off of Lemay Ferry, and one in O'Fallon at Highways K and N. Golf Discount is, and always will be, locally owned. They employ the most experienced golf staff you'll find anywhere in town. And if you're looking to get yourself some custom fit equipment, go to Golf Discount. They use the GC Quad Launch Monitor. This ensures you will always get the perfect fit you're looking for. Visit Golf Discount today.
It's time for the 19th hole on Golf with Jay Delsing. The 19th hole is brought to you by Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill.
Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill, the best burgers in town since 1986. Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill, the best burgers in town since 1986.
Well, thanks for staying with us. We just finished 18 holes, and we are headed to our favorite part of the day, the 19th hole. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm Jay here with my buddy John Perlis. We want to thank Mike Duffy. He's our official 19th hole of the show. And don't forget, August 23rd, the Richmond Heights location, 5 to 7 or later. We might do a little impromptu whack and chase.
We're doing a whack and chase.
We also got some games. We got some cool stuff we're going
to
do.
Do they need to bring their own wedges, or are we going to have
No. I got all that stuff for them. No, okay. We're good. We're going to have a – and hey, girls, you're going to be involved in this too.
Absolutely.
We got a few clubs for the girls. All right, we got to run straight away to this whack and chase. This is a good episode.
Meet, what do we have here?
Well, guys, the people can't get enough of it. Joe is back and is the next victim on Whack and Chase.
Victim he is. Joe, hey, thanks for joining us.
Glad to join you guys. I have a serious question for you.
Where are you from first, Joe, and then tell us what your question is.
Right here in St. Louis. I've been playing golf for 50 years, and all of a sudden I have a terrible affliction in my game.
Uh-oh. What is it? What is it,
affliction?
Joe?
It sounds like you need an ointment or something.
I've seen doctors and psychiatrists and bartenders. And you guys are my last hope.
That you're in desperate straits. There's no question.
Well,
there.
I personally like the way you've run through the trained professionals. You know, doctors, psychiatrists.
I like to know where we stand.
And bartenders. Yeah, that's very good. Very good.
I've tried everything. I've been playing for 50 years, and all of a sudden, about 15 years ago, I acquired a serious affliction, and I can't stop it. I got all the way down to about a 6 or 7 handicap. And now I'm up to 12, and it all happened on one day, 15 years ago, and I was standing on the fringe trying to do a little chip shot, and an attorney behind me hit into me, and I bladed the ball across the green.
Did you sue?
It was the worst feeling in my whole life. I almost killed a guy on the next hole that was trying to go down the fairway. And this attorney came up and he apologized to me. And I looked at him closely and I realized it was my ex-wife's divorce attorney.
What's the statute of limitations on that? Because I think you got a case.
I don't. I would like to sue him, but he's out of practice right now for obvious reasons. After all the money he made off of me, he retired, bought a golf course in the Bahamas. This guy absolutely killed me. And ever since then, every time I'm trying to chip the ball from 5 or 6 feet off the green, I blade it across the green, thinking that there's an attorney on the next hole that's going to scream, not four, but I object. This guy killed my game. He killed me. He ruined my life. And now I'm a 12 handicap. I'm seeking professional help. Been through rehab twice. And nothing seems to cure me. Can you guys please
my
help me?
My headphones went out.
Wait a second right now. We got technical difficulties. So, Joe, we had some technical difficulties, but wow, right in the middle of your complete call out of desperation, the confidence you have in us is way overfounded.
So the first thing I need to ask you, are you up to date on your alimony payments?
Yes, but I'm behind on my dues at Laurel Hill. I wanted to pay the attorney, hoping that I would get my stroke back.
Oh, man.
Well, somehow you have a good sense of humor about it, but I'm pretty sure it's far deeper than a mechanical issue. I mean, this goes beyond the emotional side. This is right down in the pit of your soul.
Yeah, is your ex-wife still alive?
I hope not. And the attorney's dead, too.
I think that's the best we can hope for.
What do you think would make you feel better, Joe?
Well, first, as Shakespeare said, we kill all the attorneys. Okay. Second of all, Jay and John, you got to help me stop yipping the ball across the green. Every time I draw back the club, I'm waiting for an attorney to yell, four, and then I blade it across the green. Do I wear earmuffs? Do I start putting from the rough? What do I need to do to stop yipping the ball across the green?
I think you should only wear the earmuffs in July and August. You know, just to make sure you're sweating a little bit with.
It's no, the, so warm.
If you're really concerned, if it's really happening, what you're doing
this,
is.
What do you mean it's really happening? This poor guy's bearing his soul on radio here. It's really happening.
Well, it's
okay. Oh, this is the worst thing's ever happened to me. You talk about, what's the name of your show? Dump and Chase?
Whack and Chase.
Whack
and Chase. That's what I did when I was single. Now that I'm remarried, I don't have to do that anymore.
I can't even breathe over here. Oh, man.
Okay, we need to give him a different thought, though. I mean, this is seriously a psychology type of thing. So he's got that possibility of something popping in his head. As we know, you can only think of one thing at a time.
Right.
So what should he be thinking? What should, when he gets up over every chip, knowing what's coming, right, in this years of alimony and hatred and hurt and pain.
Bitterness and resentment.
Bitterness and resentment, one of the all-time great lines. What's the line, Joe, we got to come up and you can help us. What's the line that you would rather replace, oh, God, where's the attorney type of thing? What's the line that you should replace in your head that would be synonymous with a smooth, flowy, solid chip?
If my opponent would say, that's good, Joe. Pick it up.
Well, you know, one problem we've got here, obviously, you went from a 6 to a 12. That means you're getting 6 more shots and you still can hit the golf ball. So most likely, they're not going to give you any break on that. They're not liking you at a 12 is my guess.
So, Joe, does this thing come into play when you're in the rough or in a tight lie or both?
Or just when it matters?
It happens every single hole. If I miss the green, I roll off into the rough. I have to pull out a wedge, and I have to lob this thing up there. And I'm looking over my shoulder, waiting for the judge to say, answer the question, please. You're behind on child support. I find you guilty. And then I blade it across the green.
I think something, Jay, how does this sound? I forgive you.
Wow.
I mean, that's Joe, could you do that? Are you at the point in your life where you could say, I forgive you?
No, I'm not. Not even close.
In that case, let's get a new wedge.
Okay. I'm just going to keep putting it out of the rough.
I think it's deeper than that. Come on, let's come up with a line. So that line's not going to work. What's a line that will replace that other automatic response in his head?
Well, the thought is what you're talking about. We've done this before with the mental side of the game and everything. We've got to start thinking about where you want the ball to go and not how. And the fact where you're kind of thinking this whole thing is going to come in and you have like a flinch motion. We've got to try.
I don't think so, Jay.
You said it before. We've got years. We have years of bitterness and resentment here. We have to come up with
something.
What
are you thinking,
bowling? Well, no, I think we got to come up with some line that Joe, you know, I hate you and I'll never forgive you, and then he hits a chip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Instead of the forgiveness thing, let's just go.
Hey, buddy, I'm out of money.
I'm out of money. Hit
I'm
the
out
chip.
Of money.
I like that.
No more money.
I think that fits.
How about that?
I think that fits.
You've got all my money.
There, I like that better. I like that
you
better.
You took my money. Please take my golf club and my misery.
You've got my money. You own me, and then hit the chip. Yeah. I think that's what
that's
you should
right.
do.
Let's
I think there's
a
little pace to that. You got my money.
Hit the chip. And now, Joe, this is how we end all of our Whack and Chase segments.
All right.
If we help you, tell everyone you know. Send them Christmas. Put it in your Christmas card. Tell everyone you know. If you still scull this ball across the green, tell them we never met.
All right, I promise. I hope the next time I scull the ball across the green, it hits an attorney right in the head.
I do, too.
Come on now. You got your new line. You got your new line. Get up there. You got all my money. You get up there. You ready to hit that chip?
You got all my money.
Know what chip you want to hit, like Jay said, and then as you're swinging the chip, you got all my money, and then just live with it.
You got all my money.
Let us know how that
like
works
a country
for you,
song.
It's a great country song. There's a rhythm to it.
Joe, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for the call,
Joe.
Well,
thank you very much, guys, and absolutely you've been no help at all.
Well, I don't know.
OMG, that was the Whack and Chase. That's what we've been building for
Man, that was good. Well, you know what? We're out of time. We are absolutely out of time.
You got all my money.
We're out of brain cells. We're out of laughter. I can't
Joe,
laugh anymore.
Killing us.
Thanks for keeping us on track here. Pearlie, thanks for being with us. St. Louis, thank you for listening. And hit them straight, St. Louis.
That was Golf with Jay Delsing, brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Tune in next Sunday for more from Jay, John, and the other pros and experts from the golf world. In the meantime, you can find all of Jay's shows at 101ESPN.com, as well as at jdelsinggolf.com.